father was Tom Wintingham's brother.
Yes.
And your father had 7 children.
Yes.
Tom Wintingham had no children, and that was a rather sad thing for them.
Yes, it was, yes.
So you saw quite a lot of him because he liked children.
He loved children. Mm. He was very fond of my father, which was mutual. My father was very fond of him indeed. He was the younger brother. And he, Tom Wintingham, worked in Grimsby. His business was in Grimsby.
I see. What was his business actually?
His business was timber merchant.
Oh, yes.
Timber importer.
Yes.
He used to travel quite a lot. He used to travel to Russia and to the Scandinavian countries. He had a very interesting time, and he was a bit of a gambler on this machine, because he sat a few cards or something. Mm.
But he always liked taking risks.
He'd always take a chance. Yeah. He was a jolly man, really.
So anyway, and there's a third brother who also didn't have any children.
No children.
So you really were the centres of the family.
We were the branch of the family, which would obviously, as it was be supposed, carry on in Grimsby. Mm.
Yes, I see.
That you can't tell. Really.
That's, I presume in those days was even thought rather more important than it would be now to carry on the family in the locality.
Yes, the family, and there were two family businesses. My father was a solicitor, and my uncle, you see, was a timber merchant, both taking over from their grandparents.
Yes, and the other brother was also in the timber firm, was he?
Not the other brother. The other brother owned the local newspaper, the Grimsby News, and he was also the registrar of birth, deaths and marriages in Grimsby, and that sort of thing.
So really, the Wintinghams ran Grimsby, did they? I
mean, not quite so much in that generation as in the generation before, when my grandfather, was a most powerful man.
Liberal as well.
Liberal as well, yes. He was quite an extraordinary man. He died very early of a thing that nobody need die of now, anemia. And he was a terrible loss. He'd been mayor of Grimsby many times.
So that really got Tom Wintingham launched.
Yes, it did, you see. Yes, it did. Yes.
So anyway, he interested himself a lot in social causes of various sorts.
Yeah, various sorts. And it was during the social work that he met the girl he married.
At the Sunday School, Congregational Sunday School.
Yes. Yes.
She was a Wesleyan.
Yes.
Come from Lancashire, did you say?
Lancashire or Yorkshire. I can't remember the name of the village she was born in.
Yes.
Her father was a small builder, I think.
I see.
And I think they moved to Ilkley when she was probably for the sake of training, because there was a teacher's training college there. I don't know if there is now.
Mm. You said when she came to marry Tom or to Lincolnshire, she had to adapt a lot. But what did you mean by that? I mean, just that the area is very different, or was it quite a different social level she was moving?
Yes, that's what I really meant, and it sounds a terribly snobbish thing.
No, I'm saying that is
true. Yeah. There must have been a very, very great deal to learn, and very difficult to learn, really. My mother became a great friend and guider, you might say, really, of her. And she was always very devoted to my mother.
So she was really socially below him?
In a way, yes.
When they first met
him. That's true, yes.
So she had to sort of be initiated into
Yes. And to be initiated, I suppose it's always very difficult to learn, because nobody is really very willing to do anything but just look on and say, it'll never work.
Yes. Well, I understand that.
Yes.
Because, the mother, anyway, presumably the mother had a slightly proprietorial attitude to her son.
They were deeply devoted to each other in a quite unusual way, really. Mm. And to her, of course, it was very satisfying to have a man so sensitive and so kindly, so young and so full of interests, many interests of which she shared. I think she was the first woman to become a school governor in Grimsby.
Was she really?
Yes, she was, and I think she must have been the chairman of one of the wards, because I remember, you probably won't married again.
Did she?
And left Grimsby, yes.
You mean she married after Tom had married?
Yes, yes. Some years after, yes.
I see. Yes. It's rather happy then, isn't it? Because they both got...
Yes, yes it was. Yes. She married somebody she'd known years and years ago.
Mm.
Yes.
So anyway, it obviously must have been difficult for you to see, but perhaps in retrospect you can say, how did Mrs. Wintringham cope with arriving in this family?
I think she coped very well. Of course, she was a cheerful soul, you know, and she was very pretty. She liked children, although she had never been through the terrific business of being with small children all day. As teacher, you see, is with them for, as you know, so long, and then off you go, you shut the door, and
yes.
No more responsibility. So she was interested in children. I think she was far more interested in children than when we became adolescents. She was very strict in her moral beliefs.
Well,
and I'm sure she thought, as we all think nowadays, the whole nation's going to the dogs, you know.
Yes. But as a child, do you remember her being particularly nice to you? I mean...
Yes, she was very pleasant, very generous and very nice. And my family was straggled out a long way. The eldest was 20 when the youngest was born. And that meant that I had, I think, at least 3 younger than myself. And she used to invite me to bring them for days, you know, to Little Grimsby and so on.
Mm.
And always gave us a smashing tea, things that children like, such as banana sandwiches with lots of sugar on.
And she talked to you, not in a patronising way, but sort of as a companion in a way, did she?
She did when we were young, yes. She was very jolly then, and she had many ploys, as you might say, which I still use with my... I have about 20 or 30. Well, I have 35 great-nieces and grand-nieces and nieces.
And you still use some of her?
I use some of her ploys, I think.
What sort of thing, Mrs. Neal?
Well, the sort of thing who say to anybody side of that gun, too, also, I'll read you, but I can only read if you keep a cushion on my foot. And then gradually, you see, you kick it off, and then screamed, and they rush to put it on again. So you make them sit away across the room. That sort of thing, you know, goes on. One ploy like that does many generations.
Yes, that's fair. So she was really quite good.
She was really very good with small children, and amused us all very much. We used to love to see her come.
Because the photographs you see here as MP, of course, is a very stout woman.
Yes.
A very round face.
Yes, she did.
A rather motherly sort of thing,
yes,
in a way.
Yes.
But when she first married Tom Wintringham, you feel she was rather beautiful, young woman.
Well, she was pretty, no, she wasn't beautiful. She was pretty, you know, sharp, up-tooted nose and very pleasant expression and interested in people and. With many jokes, you know, it went down well and so on.
Because it's often said about her, I mean, she's quite different from Nancy Astor, of course, the first woman's MP, because she lacks this sort of sharpness, this slightly aggressive manner. She's a much more easygoing, placid sort of person, in appearance, anyway.
Yes.
And does that fit in with your recollection of her, or is that... putting words in your mouth.
No, I don't think she was easygoing and placid, really, but she certainly hadn't got, as you say, Lady Astor's aggressiveness and chipping into a conversation with a smart word, you know. And
yes,
so on.
Yes, the sort of rather sharp wit.
Yes, and being very, very good at dealing with hecklers. She was good at her campaign to dealing with hecklers. But she dealt with them really by reason more than by sniping them down, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I understand.
Yes.
You actually heard her speak on public platforms?
Many times, yes. Of course, I drove her around quite a lot.
Did you really?
On her campaigns.
Yes.
As I tell you, the first campaign, which was only a month or two after her husband died, she did go around, and she did sit on platforms, but she spoke not one word. It was rather just very impressive, really. Of course, the people she was speaking to, most of them had known Tom Walsingham very well. He was very much in amongst...
Well-known local fish.
Very well-known, yes, and very much loved, really. And to see her... All doing well. To see her there, I think it brought home more to them the loss of Tom Walsingham than anything did, in a way. At any rate, she will deserve. See?
Yes, I see.
Yes.
So, I mean, did it surprise the family that she took over, in a way, or not?
No, we were very pleased indeed. No, I don't think it did surprise us, although it was a surprising thing, really. First thing.
She wasn't the only one to do that. Of course, Lady Tennington, I think, was another person who succeeded her husband.
She did, yes.
So
she
started a trend, in a way.
Yes, yes.
But still, I mean... You didn't think it was quite incongruous as a family, not sure.
She'd done a lot of work for women's institutes, for one thing. Mm. When they first started up, she became very keen, so that was her first, I suppose, branch off from her suffragist feelings. Mm. She certainly threw herself heart and soul. She became trained as a county organiser. She used to come and speak at women's institute meetings on any subject you can think of except religion or politics. Those were barred to us. And more or less still are, really.
Because the Women's Institute, I imagine, in this area at that time was tremendously important. Still is probably quite important.
It still is very important, yes. Yes.
So in a way, that's a way of becoming known locally to be active.
Yes, indeed. You see, every little village that she went to, everybody would listen and note her and appreciate her, because she was not a person who stood a long way away from you and addressed you. She more or less talked to everyone in the audience, which of course were never very big, although in time the Women's Institute movement did produce large meetings as transport became easier. We could send delegates and members from our ordinary monthly meetings to a large central meeting. Of course, that was not possible before cars. And in those far-off days, buses too ran.
So it really ran on the basis of a lot of very small meetings.
A lot of very small meetings, yes. Yes, you'd often be out at a time when all institutes had their annual meetings in the county, should often be out for three or four meetings a week, which meant the whole evening, really, first travelling and then travelling back.
Because it's very difficult to put oneself back in that situation. And the Women's Institute were a movement that really did a great deal for women in the countryside. Didn't
tremendous lot, and still does, yes. It gave them all sorts of outlooks and opportunities that they didn't know exist. It still does to a lesser degree.
Because it was only started around about 1915, wasn't it?
In England, yes it was, yes. Yes.
You yourself have carried on that interest, have you?
Yes, I have, yes.
Involved in it yourself?
Yes. I was a county organiser for about 20 years or so, and went round to many hundreds of institutes.
Somebody else, which has offered them together in a way which no other institution could, because it focuses on home matters or home making and that sort of thing.
Yes, it does. It focuses on that, but also it focuses on outside elements relating to the home.
Yes.
All sorts of things that people had never really considered before. Mm. They thought it was an out-to-do immediate sort of thing.
But one thing that always interests me, actually, and this is slightly off the point, but how does it relate to the Mothers' Union in small villages like this? I mean,
it doesn't relate at all. Mm. As a rule, we might have one representative. central place, and that is only one element of a village, you see, the Church of England.
Of course. I mean, in a way, one of the advantages of the Women's Institute is that they can attract people from all denominations.
All denominations and no denominations.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, and that's quite a thing. Mm. Another big thing, off the record, is that the men have their pubs. They get together for hours and hours, you know, and they play games, darts and whatnot. I think until Women's Institute came to the villages, there was nowhere at all where women met as women for their own interests, and there was certainly no chance of women playing any game at all, to see village women playing games would be something wrong in the head.
So it really emancipates women in all sorts
it
of ways.
In all sorts of ways, yes. Mm. Yes.
That's interesting.
Yes, it is. It is.
Anyway, she was quite active in that, was she? That, in a sense, gave her experience on platforms and made her known.
Yes.
This was before she became an MP.
That was before she became an MP. And, of course, she was interested in schools and their set-ups. She became one of the first governors, as I did, of the Caister Modern School. That was 1936, I think, which put an end, thank goodness, to the all-age primary school.
I see, yes, yes. So she was quite a public figure in a non-political way.
Yes.
Before she ever actually succeeds her husband.
Yes. Although, yes, she was, but at the same time she did accompany him to nearly all his public meetings. And I think she learned to speak a little then, as well as, I suppose, to the Women's Institute, who are really the trainers.
And the suffrage movement, I suppose, in a way. I mean, you say she was presumably a non-militant suffrage person.
She was a non-militant, yes. Mm. She was.
Do you know anything about that, Mrs. Newland? Do you know anything about her career in the non-militant suffrage?
No, I don't. I wish I did.
It's rather early, I suppose, isn't it?
It was early, yes. It must have been... The first time I heard the word was, I must have been 8 or 9, I suppose, and went to stay with my Uncle Tom and my aunt in Grimsby before they moved. And my uncle then was interested in politics, of course, and he was talking about suffragettes. And my aunt was arguing with him, and I'd never heard a political argument before about the merits of the non-violent and the violent, as you might say. And it was just then that I heard the word suffragists, and she said that you didn't believe in throwing yourself under horses' feet and that sort of thing, or even chaining yourself to the railings anywhere. But she thought that reason would get what we wanted.
Well, what sort of line did he take about that?
I think he thoroughly agreed with that, because he was a very peaceful sort of a man, really, but, you know, He was fiery in standing up for what he believed to be right, but he would never whirl into a fight. I only heard him once, I think at the House of Commons, he met a man called Greenwood, Hamer Greenwood, who had been in Grimsby quite a lot, I think possibly for my grandfather, John Fivels's election. And they flew at each other with great force, I remember, on the gallery of the house, the outside walk, you know, the House of Commons. Mm. I was really impressed and pleased.
But you actually were there then, were you, when Mrs. Wintringham was campaigning for her husband's seat? That is...
Yes, I was, yes.
Were you really?
I was in all her campaigns, only as a driver, mind you. Of course, at that time, you may not believe it, doesn't seem possible now, I was almost completely dumb, you know, I had to think of what people were saying. You waste when you were young, you know, not being able to put words to things.
So you listened rather than...
Yes, I listened, yes, and took it in. But I would drive her or any of her canvassers anywhere all day and all night, you know. I did that with pleasure.
Because you were rather pioneer in driving, presumably, as a woman at that time.
I suppose I was, really. I suppose I was. Yes.
But anyway, even when she was campaigning for the seat, she didn't say anything.
Not that first time.
Why? This was just because women weren't supposed to?
No, it wasn't that. Really, she was quite shattered by her husband's death. And yet she wanted to carry on something that had been very dear to him. And she had many... many supporters who would speak for her, and she simply went round and was there and would be her member. And they all knew her through the Women's Institute, really, as much as anything, and through seeing her with my uncle at his meetings.
That's extremely interesting. So, in a sense, it's a rather eloquent appeal, isn't it, just to be sitting there as a widow?
It was very, very striking, really, yes. Yes, yes, it was. And she wouldn't have pulled it off if she hadn't been well-known herself, as well as very well-known. One farmer, I remember, who really was a Tory, said to his, the person who was sitting near him, "Well, if Maggie's good enough for Tom, I reckon she's good enough for me. I'll vote for her." You know, that sort of thing.
She had a personal following, really.
Yes, she had. Yes, she had. Mm. Yes. They were a very good pair.
But anyway, when you were driving her around, what was her attitude? You saw her in private, of course, as well as public,
yes,
while she was campaigning. Like,
yes.
That. Was she nervous? Was she,
not
in the mood?
I couldn't tell for her first campaign at all. She hardly spoke to anybody, really. All her other campaigns, yes, she was always nervous. She was always very nervous before a big meeting. She was always sure that her voice was going to go, or that her legs would go to jelly and all that sort of thing. And my mother's friends, who used to rally round and support her and so on, there's one who is the matron of a big children's hospital in London. She always used to long to lace her cup of tea with something on it, but before a big meeting. But you see, she was such a strict teetotaler. I think she would have smelt drink miles away.
She was, when you say she was strict teetotaler and she had very strong moral beliefs, she was then in the temperance movement, was she? And,
yes,
and
very
anti-permissive
strong
in every way, presumably,
yes,
as we now describe it.
Yes.
What other, Sabbatarian was she? I mean, what sort of causes was she?
No, I don't think a strict Sabbatarian. In fact, I know she wasn't, because in the village that she retired to after my uncle died, she had a lovely little cottage there, a lovely garden. She used to garden on a Sunday, and she had a deputation one day, all in black and with black ties and white collars, from the village church, chapel rather, to ask if she would please mind if she must garden on the Sabbath, which was not held to be a good thing at all. Would she please mind doing it in the back garden and not the front?
What was her attitude to that?
Well, she was still in Parliament, so she thought she might as well.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Be careful, don't you?
Yes,
you but could. What difference, Mrs. Neal, did it make to her personal life? I mean, how she lived, where she lived, and that sort of thing, when she was widowed? I mean, did she then move house and
she
live on her own?
She didn't move at once, no. As long as she was in Parliament, she stayed in Little Grimsey Hall, which is a big house, an old house, a beautiful house. My uncles, well, they're both buried there. There's a tiny little church attached. No, she didn't move until she was knocked out of Parliament.
That was in 1924.
It was, yes. She kept on the county. She kept on her county council work. She was county councillor. But Tealby, where she retired to, was very much nearer to Lincoln, and she's still driving herself, God help us all. Is that on that?
Yes, doesn't she?
No, no. Mm.
She then had a house or cottage, you say, of her own, did she?
Yes,
they
had that for many years, when they were in Grimsey. In fact, very soon after they got married, they bought this little cottage on a beautiful hillside and had a lovely little garden there.
I see, so it was a second home, I see.
It was weekend.
And then she retired into the weekend
home.
She
did, yes.
I see, when she didn't get into Parliament.
Yes,
yes. Yes. So how did she live there? Did she have a servant or any help at all?
Well, that was the trouble, really. I think she had good help from the village, but I don't think she had any permanent help, which is beginning to get very difficult then. And she decided she must give up driving in this is many years after that, she moved into Lincoln, to live in Lincoln, in the Vicar's Close around the cathedral there. But there again, she didn't like living alone, and she could never find anybody exactly right to live and live with her and help her.
She tried as a companion, did she, but they just didn't work.
No, it didn't work.
So what sort of life did she lead? I mean, in a sense, she backed the wrong horse, didn't she, by being a liberal at that time, from a point of view of having a political career, didn't she?
Yes, I suppose she did. I suppose there was a turnover then, yes.
And there are quite a lot of people who were in the women's movement and so on, like she was, fade out simply because they weren't in the right party. I mean, they were in the, they backed the wrong party, in a sense, from the point of view of their future.
Yes.
I mean, she lost out in 24 when a lot of liberals went out.
Yes, they did,
and
yes.
The party, of course, never really came back on.
No, it never did, no.
Do you remember her attitude to her defeat in 24? I mean, was she very upset about it?
Yes, she was. She was angry about it, I think. She was knocked out here. She fought another one at Aylesbury, as you know, and lost. She pulled down a Conservative majority a great deal, but she lost that too. And that was her last throw, really. It probably would have been better if she had stuck to her own home ground, but I don't know.
This the Aylesbury one was 24, wasn't it? I'm not as well up in her later career as I should be. I mean, she...
I can't say what date it would be. I think it would be, yes. I don't know, I think the 24 was her last Lincolnshire one.
Yes. She didn't stand in Lincolnshire then again.
No, she didn't.
I see.
No, she's rather bitter about it, really, I think. Very disappointed. And she certainly had, in Parliament, done her very best for all young people's movements, as you might say, play schools, nursery schools, anything to do with young people, and for women as well.
And sort of family causes, really.
Yes. She was very highly thought of. Of course, she was so...
She was just a sort of sensible woman, wasn't she?
Sensible.
Straightforward.
She was so sensible and straightforward, yes. I think that people, when first she got into Parliament, at any rate, took advantage of her... straightforwardness, perhaps you might call it, or perhaps her lack of the deviousness that you need to be a good politician.
Yes.
To come back, you mentioned Lady Astor. Nobody in the world could have been kinder to my aunt than Lady Astor when she first entered Parliament. Lady Astor could have made things very, very difficult for her by not befriending her and not showing her all the ropes and advising her and so on, and not joining in with her on the things that my aunt was interested in, and which Lady Astor, of course, was very interested in: temperance, young people, children's acts, women's rights, and so on. There were all those. And Lady Astor often took her to her own home. She was many times at Clevedon, where she met many interesting people, of course.
So really they worked as a team, those two, together?
Well, not altogether. Nobody could really team with Lady Astor.
That's quite right. But still, they didn't...
On many things they worked together, yes. And Lady Astor was always full of good advice as to how to do this and how not to tackle that and so on.
Did your aunt enjoy being in Parliament?
Yes, very much, I think. Yes, very much. She really felt that what she did and said might eventually have bring the desired results for the people that she was thinking about.
And she had an ability, didn't she, to talk to people of any social class?
Yes, she was very good, very, very good at that indeed. Very sensible. And she talked to them as if they were really knowledgeable, valuable people who whose opinion she was seeking, so on, even if they said, oh, no, we shan't vote for you, oh, that is interesting, she would say, you know, and do tell me why, and, you know, so she would go on.
Not in any way patronising.
No, she wasn't patronising. No, that is a very good thing about her. She was not in the least patronising. I think she realised that we all have so many things in common, you can't patronise anybody.
Of course, in a sense, she has the advantage because she herself comes from a relatively humble background,
yes,
by comparison with her husband.
Yes, that was a...
So she sees both sides.
Both sides, a great advantage. Mm.
That's interesting.
Yes. And her training of a teacher, as a teacher, of course, have taught her a great deal about human nature. Obviously, you see it in the raw with people that age.
Yes, yes, you do.
From two upwards.
Did she, was she always really a non-Lincolnshire woman, rather obviously so, the way she spoke and her attitudes, and did she stand out rather as...
No, she didn't. No, she had a very good speaking voice. She had no accent whatsoever. And it all came over very sensibly and clearly, and she explained what she hoped to do, given support by those she was speaking to, you know. She's really down to earth and sensible in that sort of way.
Mm. Anyway, if we take her sort of out of Parliament now, you say she carried on with her county council work. She was a county councillor.
During the war, I don't know whether before or not, during the war she was on the agricultural subcommittee.
During the first war or the second?
No, the second war.
Second war, I see.
And she co-opted me onto the horticultural subcommittee of that. And being on that, I don't know which came first, the land army or the agricultural subcommittee, but she was the head, whatever it might be called, the director perhaps, of the Women's Land Army in Lincolnshire in the Second World War.
Was she?
Yes. And that was quite a big job because of the enormous scatter of, you see, there was no meeting place for them at all.
No.
They're all individuals planted down in strange places.
So she had to liaise between
them? Liaise, yes, and get people to liaise. Yes.
But she did this by driving herself around a lot, I suppose, didn't she?
Yes, she did, yes, yes. Later on, I think probably whilst during her campaign, she had a driver who was a very nice man and a very good gardener as well, a man called Smith, who still lives in Teelby. He would have many. Yes.
I must make a note of that, if I may.
Yep, governor of the new Hayston Modern Secondary School. She got a job for Smith as the gardening lecturer. So, being a teacher is a step up. Mm. You realise that?
Yes.
He is now Mr. Smith, and he lives retired in Teelby. Would you like me to start that again?
No, that's fine. She wasn't interested in sort of academic things, really.
No, she was not. She was not an intellectual at all, and she was not interested in any of the arts either. Not music, not serious reading, if that's not a...
She was a practical woman.
She was a very practical person, she was, yes. Yes, she was.
So that must have meant that she didn't have a lot of personal resources to fall back on when her political career ended.
And so
she had to find other things to do, I suppose. Like being active locally on the council and that sort of thing.
Yes, there was that. Owing to Lady Astor's really great influence on her, she had become a Christian Scientist.
Oh, did she really?
Yes, she did,
that.
Yes.
Well, I haven't realized that at all. So anyway, she got all her religious sort of energies were channeled into that.
Yes, they were. Yes. I've just been reading the life of Lady Astor.
Yes.
In which it gives a very, very full and careful account of the way that Lady Astor became interested in Christian science.
Is this Norman Sykes's?
Yes, it's Norman Sykes's
book.
Very good indeed. Very good.
Yeah.
And in there are several mentions of my aunt, and one of the ones that I rather cherish Audrey had said that with, when she and Lady Astor were working together, it was just as if Lady Astor was a high-stepping blood horse and she was a trudging pony, you know.
Because there was a great case for a woman of that type being an MP, because there was a danger, wasn't there, that the, only the feminist and rather obviously militant women would be prominent.
Yes.
She's the first who's not like that.
Yes, really. That's true. She was, and she could speak for tremendous
for ordinary
section
women.
Of yes. ordinary women, yes.
Do you think, I mean, looking back at her, as you look back at her now, was she a feminist, really? Do you see her as a feminist?
Let me just think about that.
It's rather a sort of odd question in a way, but I mean, she doesn't really fit into the women's movement in that way of campaigning only for specifically women's causes.
No, she didn't. No, she didn't. I think that probably her interest in small young children would lead her away from the completely feminist. Funnily enough, of course, the child does lead you to the grown-up man, after all. And you see all humanity differently if you look at children whose motives are all bare and all...
I quite agree.
...under your eye. Yeah. So I think, really, probably her fondness for small children, as well as her great interest in seeing that justice was done to women.
Mm. And she never had any sort of anti-man aspect about her at all. She was not attractive.
No. She could argue, but argue very cheerfully and very amusingly with men who told her that she was on the wrong horse and that sort of thing. Often heard her tying them up in several very polite knots, you know.
Did she like being in London? Did she like London? Because, I mean, where London in those days, even more than now, must have seemed a long way away.
It was a long way away, but of course life was not nearly as hectic there then as it is now, not nearly. Mm. And she had a very nice flat, not very far from the House of Commons.
Did she?
Yes. I can't remember her ever saying anything against London, except that she was so pleased to come back to the peace of Tealby or Little Grimsby,
yes.
Wherever she might have been
yes.
then.
What about sort of household things? I mean, what sort of houses did she build around herself? What sort of place did she live in?
Well, her first house was a very well-built, very good sort of upper-middle-class house in Grimsby.
That's the one that she lived in with her
husband? That's the one, yeah, where she first lived there with him. Mm. With having no artistic interests, it was difficult for her, I think, to realise that houses all demand something of their occupants. Mm. Does that sound sloppy, really?
Yeah, I quite understand what you mean, yes.
And that, of course, didn't show so much until she went to Little Grimsby, mm. taking all the furniture that she'd had from at the Grimsby house. Mm. And unless you're in tune with a house, it's a pretty, pretty uncomfortable thing.
I agree. So she did make a house that was distinctively her own, did she, when she moved out?
I think you could say that, yes. Mm. You could say that.
But not an artistic house or anything
no,
like that?
No, not anything that recognised the needs of a house of a certain architectural... Mm.
She wasn't really home-centred at all, do you think? She didn't like being at home particularly. She didn't build up a sort of home.
Well, yes, I think you could always tell it was her home, and certainly in her garden. I mean, that's an art in itself. I keep saying she wasn't interested in art. Gardening is an art, a very, very slow one, of course. Building a picture every 40 years or so.
She did her own garden. She dug and things herself.
She picked out and all that sort of thing, yes. She really enjoyed that, yes. Yeah.
And that was just flowers, was it, or vegetables as well?
Well, during the last war, she had quite a good vegetable plots and so on. Mm. Used to ply her friends with onions and lettuces and things, but she did, you know, she made great use. But also just cheerful and nice, it's a lovely little garden. though she'd never been used to it at all. She, having been a teacher, having left home and so on, she'd never been used to doing it herself. And although we all had to come to it, as you might say, whether we liked it or not, she did appear rather to resent the fact that people were not there to do it for her. And in a way, you see, she was working for other people. She felt that
somebody
she
probably
had a right to expect other people to do what they could, and she didn't want to do. Mm.
So she had people in to do for her,
yes,
so to speak.
Yes. Mm. Yes, at Little Grimsby, I think she was lucky. I think she had retainers and people from the village who were determined and help.
But when you were a child and you went to have one of your days, sort of thing,
yes.
Did you expect good food, bad food, to be comfortable or uncomfortable?
You accept things so much when you're a child, don't you? I don't think we ever dreamt of anything but ordinary, plain, simple food, you know, in those days. And I'm sure that that would be given to us. Mm. And as I tell you, banana sandwiches, there's sugar on it, and children's idea of high living.
What about the later years? I'm afraid I don't know the later years. She went to Lincoln, didn't she?
Yes, she went to Lincoln. Yes, she wasn't at all happy there, really. Really, of course, she could never find a housekeeper who came up to what she wanted. I used to go, but then, of course, I was well grown up and rattling along on my own ploys. I was on a lot of committees and things that she had been on. And I don't really think she liked that. You know,
she just didn't fit into Lincoln life really very well.
Well, in a way she did very well. Because in the houses round the cathedral, it's almost like a village full of very pleasant and highly educated, cultured people, if that's not a snob way of putting it. And they all were very kind to her and nice to her. But I think she felt cramped, you know. I think she had a little bit of garden in the front, facing the cathedral, which she liked very much.
Did she, in fact, die in her home, or did she have...
No, she had gone, I think, for Christmas, her last Christmas, to, I think, a Christian Scientist home, and she died there.
Did she?
Yes, she had been extremely happy there, for not many weeks, I think.
So, she really did make a lot of friends in Christian Science, generally?
Yes, she must have done. She must have done.
It is rather...
It's rather strange.
In a way, because it does narrow her connections rather, doesn't it?
Yes, but of course, old age narrows your life altogether.
Yes, of course it does. Yes, yes, yes. Still, there's no need to artificially narrow it in that way.
No, it is. It is a narrowing there.
But what did she say about Lady Esther, apart from the fact that she'd been very kind to her and so on, and initiating her? Did they get on well? They must have done, if
they
she
got on very well, very well. I think that, although it doesn't say so in Norman Sykes's book, I think that she went to Russia with Lady Esther.
Did she?
Lady Esther went to see the set-up of nursery schools, which was at that time, I think, that Bernard Shaw and his wife went.
That's
to.
Right, yes, yes.
And I think my auntie certainly went to Russia with Lady Esther, and I don't see any other mention in the book about it. And you don't ask anybody to go unless you're on very good terms with them.
No, certainly not. But I hadn't realised that Lady Esther had actually converted her to Christian Science.
Yes, no, because it seems completely out of her line of country.
Because Lady Esther also converted one of the figures in that site, well, one of the round table people.
Yes, not Lionel Curtis, one of the...
Lord Lothian.
Lord Lothian, yes, that's true. I knew him from another angle. Sure, that has nothing to do with this, yes.
Did you?
Yes. He was a friend of the Fillimores, Bobby Fillimore and his wife.
Yes.
Yes.
What about liberalism in this area, or in the Grimsby area, Mrs. Neal? I mean, was it a flourishing cause, really?
Oh, indeed it was, yes. Mm. Yes. A very, very strong tradition. Mm. I think stronger, really, than Toryism, who are always looked at, really, as the grinders of the faces of the poor, you know. liberalism was supposed to be the great liberator. And that linked up with Wesleyanism, of course.
Yes.
Of course, Wesley was a great power in this part of the world. In fact, the office of the timber merchants, Wintringham and Son, which my uncle Tom Wintringham, Margaret Wintringham's husband, owned and worked in, had until a couple of years ago, I suppose, a little street by the side of this office and works called Ranter's Wharf. This was from there that inspired Wesleyans would deliver their speeches and Wesley was one of those. He came to Grimsby, I think, twice or three times.
I see. So the whole family was rather self-consciously Wesleyan, was it? I mean,
yes. Wesleyan or Congregationalists. I can't really sort them out very well in my mind.
Yes.
My grandmother, the mother of Tom Wintringham, was certainly a Congregationalist.
I see.
And my father was, but I think my uncle became Wesleyan. I can't be sure about that.
And how does that relate then to the Anglican religion round about? I mean, are all the establishments that speak Anglican at that time, and are your family, in a sense, anti-establishment?
I don't think they were really anti anything that purported to be Christian. Mm. They certainly didn't go to, and certainly their children were not christened there. Mm. I think I was christened in somebody's drawing room, and I can remember my young sister being christened at home because the pug dog came in at the time. It was very pleasing to us all. Yes. Yes. No, although we hadn't had many friends, and really and truly, as youngsters, we didn't care tuppence what they were. And I think my father and mother must be very broad-minded, because as youngsters, we had to go to some place of worship on a Sunday morning, but we were allowed to choose whether we went to the Church of England Church in Humberston Village or the Wesleyan Chapel, also in Humberston Village. And we generally tossed up and went where the coin said. So there was really no bigoted feeling at all.
Because Grimsby isn't, I mean, I always imagined, obviously wrongly, Mrs. Wintringham was a farmer's wife, that sort of person. But in fact, she's an urban person.
She's an urban person. Yes, she was urban, who adjusted herself marvellously well to rural people and surroundings. Mm. And she was an adjustable person, or she could never have had the career she had.
At least in her earlier years, she was adjustable.
Yes, she was, yes.
Yes, I mean, everybody becomes a little less adjustable.
But of course, to have adjusted to Christian times was quite a
I suppose so.
Being 60 or so, 50 or 60, wasn't she?
Yes.
Yes.
Is there anything else you think I ought to ask you about her that would bring out her personality that I have asked you? I mean, one always sort of, was always making rather crude shots at somebody who one doesn't know and so on.
Yes.
Is there anything that strikes you as sort of important about her that we haven't talked about?
I think her kindness and hospitality can't be overstressed, really. She was very kind to many people, and she had many very intelligent friends. Lady MacLean, for instance, Donald MacLean's widow and mother of the Donald MacLean. Lady MacLean came and stayed with her when her son defected, if you remember.
Did she?
Yes. And you don't, it needs to be a very staunch friend you can go to at a time like this.
Yes. She was a family person, Mrs. Wintringham, was she? I mean, she liked keeping up with her husband's relatives and her own relatives.
Her own relatives, very much so, yes. Mm. Not so much us, in a way, when we grew up, because we grew up in a way, she was perhaps a bit jealous of the place I made for myself, coming in her footsteps, really.
I see.
But
yes.
That doesn't.
But she really had her own circle after she left Tom. After Tom died, she didn't really move in the circle she'd been in while she was round here.
Not so much. Not nearly so much. Of course, she was busy with other.
other causes. Other causes.
It's
just what I want to hear from
you. It's rather like the VCs and the DSOs in the army.